Welcome to TFL on Tape. We hope your spring is going well. We've been busy at the press with the recent release of Workers' Right Tales from the Concourse and reading for the summer issue of The First Line. We also recently opened registration for our new writing workshop. Writing with The First Line is a 6-week online interactive course where writers will learn and practice the basics of fiction and storytelling, including character, plot, point of view, dialogue, voice, and more. Writers will be expected to read, discuss, and challenge their perception of what makes good fiction. Writing with The First Line will take place this summer in July and August. If you are interested, visit the website for more information and to register. And remember, Patreon members get a discount on tuition. On to the episode. David is going to read Morag Allen Campbell's story, First Contact. Morag's story, which appeared in the winter 2024 issue, begins with the first line. The parking lot was empty.
The parking lot was empty. Perfect, he thought. Leaving just enough space to open the tailgate, he reversed the truck up to the wire fence and pulled on the handbrake. The lot had seen better days, and it was years since the parking bays had been laid out. The lines were all faint now, ghost-like boxes for cars long gone. The lot was one big blank canvas for him to play with. Not that this was a game. Out of season, it would have been a while before the guys at the soccer field noticed that the line painter was missing. He wheeled the machine into the center of the parking lot, filled it with neon yellow paint, and set it in motion. He completed the first circle in just a couple of minutes. It was the smallest, after all. He moved the line marker a few feet away and started again, completing another circle around the first, then a third, and a fourth. The final circle took the longest time, a good half an hour to make the circuit. He stood back to admire his handiwork, a massive target painted right there in the empty parking lot. He squinted up into the sky. You need to make sure the lines were bright enough to be seen out in space, his son once told him. He looked at the yellow lines again and wondered if they were bright enough. They'll do, he thought. He sat in the empty parking lot all night, but nothing happened. Nobody came, not from the sky or anywhere else. No visitors from outer space. No police. Not even the beat-up old security guard who was meant to be looking after the place. As the dawn light started to turn the smog a light shade of orange, he packed up the van and went home. Another night, another parking lot. This time, someone had left a bright yellow Chevy parked right in the middle of the lot, but he figured he'd just leave it where it was. It's bright yellow, he thought. Make the most of it. He painted his circles around it, making the Chevy a nice, big, juicy bullseye in the middle. The security guard at this parking lot wasn't such a lazy bum, and by the time he got back to the truck, there was a whole row of boys in blue waiting for him. They were kind to him, he had to admit that. He sat at the end of someone's desk with a cup of some kind of hot liquid while the cops passed back and forth around him, shuffling notes and exchanging files. He heard them say Nutter a few times, but he had expected that. He didn't care. Will I be on the late-night news? He asked, but no one was listening. Finally, they took him into a side room and started to ask him questions. Yes, he said. It's a message to extraterrestrials. My son gave me the idea years ago. Did you ever see the film Close Encounters? But the cops all looked way younger than his son, and no one said anything. I used to watch it with my boy years ago. We talked about aliens all the time, how we could maybe get them to come down and say hello. And that's what you were trying to do here? Get some little green men to come down and say howdy? Something like that, he said. You want us to call your son? If you could, that would be great. They couldn't get a hold of his son, so they charged him with criminal damage. He paid a fine and did some community service working in a soup kitchen. He couldn't have chosen better himself, he thought, but it didn't help. He scanned the faces of the lines of men who shuffled in for their soup and dry bread. Then it was time to try again. My son would have loved this, he said, waving his hand around another cramped gray interview room. He loved police dramas. I thought you said he was into space stuff. That too. The cop peered at the notes on his desk in front of him and shook his head. We tried to get a hold of your son the last time you were in here. Anyone else we could call? Your wife? Nah, she left me years ago. I got a bit obsessed, you know. Yeah, we know. The officer shuffled his papers again and then sat back in his chair, rocking his impressive bulk on the back legs. It was late at night and he looked like he just wanted to be in bed. The collar of his shirt was frayed and his shoes were scuffed. He sighed as he flicked through the papers on his desk. Last couple of times, you just painted a few lines on a parking lot. This time, it was stolen searchlights and a generator, and you dragged them all to the middle of a field and lit up half the county like Christmas. Looking for aliens again? Something like that. When he got out of jail, he went straight to a hardware store and picked up some supplies. He was on his way to a field outside town with a truck full of old furniture and a few cans of gas when he saw the blue lights flashing behind him. Back in the interview room, he stared into another cup of hot, sweet liquid. We used to watch that kind of shit for hours, you know. Space films, stuff about alien landings, the Roswell incident. We couldn't get enough of it. And my son used to say, why don't we just paint a big welcome sign somewhere, or a message on the sidewalk, letters 20 feet high, or circles, somewhere for them to land, or set up lights or fires, anything that they could see from space. Just shout loud enough, his son once said. This time, the officer wasn't swinging on his chair, and he had even more papers on his desk. How long has your son been missing now? A year or two, maybe a few. You lose track, you know. It takes a while to shake them off this time, but it's amazing how resourceful you can be when you put your mind to it. He's gathered enough stuff together to make a torch the size of the Statue of Liberty, and enough fuel to make it blaze like hell itself. He lights a match and stands back, waiting for the flames to take hold. Waiting for the sirens to start. Waiting for someone to come, like he's been doing for a year or two, maybe a few. You lose track. Through the heat haze and the smoke, he sees a figure coming toward him. At last. The boy's eyes are now those of a man, downcast, earth-worn, older, wiser. He keeps walking, looking straight ahead, looking straight at him.
What the hell are you doing, Dad?
He says, hands in pockets, rough, dirty clothes hanging on his shoulders. I knew you'd come, says his father, if I shouted loud enough.
Born near Glasgow in central Scotland, Morag Allan Campbell now lives in rural Perthshire. She has a background in magazine journalism and editorial management, and is a historian of medicine, particularly 19th century mental health care. Morag's story appeared in Volume 26, Issue 4 of The First Line. Tune in next time for another episode of TFL on Tape.